Coming to you live from the ladies' room, I'm Tom Rich, and oh my God! And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 34, there are two snack bars in here.
Welcome back to the podcast, the Mildly Alarming Podcast, the internet's first and best all Pokemon Go podcast. All we talk about ever is Pokemon Go. It's just about Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go forever. Pokemon Go. I'm Johannes Pokemon Go Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Pokemon Go Rich.
What's your favorite game, Tom?
Pokemon Go.
Mine too.
Wow.
Glad we had this talk.
It's a good talk. I caught a Charizardle.
Charizardle.
It's like half a Charizard and half a Squirtle. They mix them.
Well, this has been this week's episode of the Mildly Alarming Podcast about Pokemon Go. See you next week.
Goodbye.
Dun-dun-dun. You're an idiot.
That's how it ends, right?
It's why it's over. And now, welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast, the normal one. Well, not normal. The usual one.
About regular things.
The board games.
The only show on the internet about board games. Every other one got canceled in The Purge. So we're here. We're happy. We're glad that you're here. We are queer, but not in the way you think.
In the old-timey kind of way.
Yeah, in the old-timey, just a little off. Like, you know, like how your parents might say, there's something wrong with that one. It's not right. What's going on there?
Hey, Tom, you're speaking into the part of the microphone that doesn't pick up sound.
Oh, okay. Let me just adjust that. So I'm talking to the part of the microphone that does pick up sound.
Well done.
Is that better?
Yep.
All right, good.
Considerably.
Go team.
Speaking of teams, we're talking about Pokemon Go. Oh, no, we did that already.
My workplace that I work at had to put up a sign on the door telling people that Pokemon Go trainers who are not also employees of the university would not be allowed in.
I wonder if they put up a separate sign somewhere else saying employees of the university who are also Pokemon Go trainers should cut that out on work time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's in the break room or something.
I'm sure conversations have been had. It's like, no, Carl, you can't spend half of your day in the parking lot going after that Caterpie.
They are selling, it's already sold out in pre-order like twice, a device. It's kind of like a Fitbit smartwatchy kind of thing, but it's just like a little clip that goes on your wrist or on your pocket or bag or whatever that syncs to your phone and does all of the GPSing that your phone otherwise would do, so that you can basically be playing Pokemon Go even when you're not playing Pokemon Go. And when that comes out, I look forward to the long, long list of schools and workplaces that immediately ban it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. To my knowledge, none of my coworkers are playing Pokemon Go. I haven't seen it happen yet, but
they're doing it.
I'm sure
they are. They definitely are.
Yeah. But I don't have a smartphone, so I can't play Pokemon Go.
You're missing out, man, on apparently like getting hit by trucks and running into police cars and
wandering into bad neighborhoods and getting shot up by drug dealers.
Has that happened yet?
I think some people have been robbed, at least.
Oh, yeah. There was a thing a couple weeks ago about people who were using Pokemon Go setting lures at Pokestops so that more Pokemon would be there.
Oh, no.
And then when players showed up to catch the Pokemon, they would mug them and take their money and phones.
That is amazing. Yeah. Like, sucks for those players a lot, but like, that's some top class criminality there.
Like, they took the AR portion, the augmented reality portion of the game, and really augmented reality. Like, you know, they lured in their prey and then caught and captured it, I guess.
Do you think any of them yelled Team Rocket's blasting off again as they ran away with people's phones and wallets?
I hope so.
I hope that happened. Some children's hospitals had to tell people to stop setting lures around the children's hospital because there were children who couldn't get up and like go chase the Pokemon who were being super sad because the Pokemon weren't close enough to their beds to get after them.
Hmm.
And they're like, this sets kind of unrealistic expectations for the kids. that are in the children's hospital. I'm like, that's sad.
Yeah. Kind of disappointing.
And like the nurses can't be wheeling their beds all around chasing Pokemon all day.
I mean, to be fair, you shouldn't have to move. If you can see the Pokemon, you can catch it.
Yeah, but what if the Pokemon's like just out of range?
Then you can't see it. They only appear if they're close enough to catch.
I guess. Maybe the kids knew lures had been set. We're like, but if I just get out of bed and go
around. Yeah, that's possible. They can see the lure.
Yeah. Or they might have seen online, we've put a bunch of lures at the children's hospital.
The such and such a place.
Yeah.
Like how we said we weren't going to talk about Pokemon five minutes ago.
Which, incidentally, the sentence, we put a bunch of lures at the children's hospital, out of context, is terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's not a lot of situations where you can talk about putting down lures at the children's hospital and it's okay. Speaking of things that are okay, I guess. Let's do that segue. We were at a place where we were not playing Pokemon Go this past weekend, but we were at Protospiel.
Do I have to make theme music for Protospiel now?
I'll hum it if you don't.
It's less work for me.
Ba 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 bum 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 ba bum ba ba.
Okay, so a few pointers. That is not humming.
Oh, good point.
I'm going to stop there.
That's the main point.
That's the big one.
You want me to focus on figuring out what humming is first before we move on to the other the other lessons in your curriculum?
Yeah.
All right, cool. But we went to Protospiel this past weekend. Same one we went to last year in Chelsea, Michigan, organized by the inestimable David Witcher, who is a classy gent. So thank you for organizing that, Sir David of House Witcher, with your fancy hat.
Thanks, David.
And your shoes. And your teeth.
He probably used all of those things.
Probably. He's a classy guy. We like David. He's a good guy. Yeah. So there are a bunch of game designers in the room, all playtesting their prototypes, talking shop, looting the swag table provided by thegamecrafter.com. So thank you for that. Thegamecrafter.com's JT, who was the guy we met there from thegamecrafter.com.
Thegamecrafter.com.
Who did not pay us to advertise, but I'm doing it anyway.
You can find them on the internet at thegamecrafter.com.
Actually, they're at mildlyalarming.com now.
You can find them there as well.
It was a lot of fun. We had a really great time. Got to play some fantastic games. Got to meet some fantastic people. And just generally chill for a bit. Right? That's what we did.
I don't know if I would say chill.
We had to play a lot of games.
It was a solid 3 days of human interaction.
Well,
which could not possibly be, you know, okay, it could possibly be more stressful, but that is, you know, the height of normal.
Right. So we thought we'd take the first segment tonight and talk about some of the highlights for us of the things we saw, people we met over the weekend, and the second segment we would talk a little bit about the feedback we got and where we want to go with our games. So Johannes, what was your
highlight?
No, it's not the word I want.
Spotlight?
No.
Headlight?
No.
Floodlight?
No.
Crystal light?
No.
Sunny delight?
No.
Tang?
Yeah, that's it. What was your tang for the weekend?
Sort of an orange powder that you mix with water.
I haven't had tang in a long time. You're going to leave that in, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
What were you actually asking me?
What was your highlight of the week? What was the thing you saw that you thought was
coolest?
The
first word I said.
No, that doesn't sound right.
we talked about being excited to see Jerry Paquette's game.
I thought it was Gary Paquette.
I know you thought that. And we did see it and get to play it, and it was excellent. He so we talked about it a little bit a couple weeks ago on the show, saying it was the one with the ships that move in three dimensions, and it's like space bumper cars, kind of. He went through, I think he said, 7 iterations at Protospiel last year.
Yeah.
He brought it again this year. It was very much more polished, and we played it, and it was a ton of fun.
Very polished, very streamlined, yeah.
I think it's pretty much where it needs to be. I think it's where he wants it to be. He's got some really just polished stuff to do. But
what really impressed me about his prototype this year was, you know, he's got a tricky task ahead of him because he's got to give you a clear way of indicating how you want to maneuver your ship in three dimensions on a two-dimensional card. That's a tall order for any kind of visual design. But he did a fantastic job of mirroring the image of the ship to the artwork on the card.
Yeah.
So that it was very, very easy to tell how your ship was going to react to the card that you played. And I remember that being one of the things he'd iterated on a bunch of times last year, and he really seems to have nailed it this time. So
yeah, he moved to cards that are square. He may have started with cards that were square, to be honest, because we watched him iterate, and so a lot of the times he was playing with cards that had been drawn in marker on the blanks that had been brought by the game crafter. So I don't know if he had square cards, but on square cards now, so you just start with your card in the orientation that your ship is already in, and it gives you a perfect idea of what it is that this card will do. So now play consists of programming three moves. You can drift up or down with one card, drift left or right with one card. You can pitch up or down with one card. Mm-hmm. You can rotate left or right.
I think it was rotate, yeah.
Turn. And you can thrust forward or backward. So you can't roll. That's the only axis you can't move on. Mm-hmm. So you program three, and you try to maneuver your ships to be lined up such that the front of your ship is pointed at the side, bottom, top, or back of another ship. If you're front to front, it doesn't do anything because your lasers cancel out. But if you're facing any other way, you score points. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much as simple as that.
Yeah, you play until a certain point level or a certain number of rounds and then score it out. High score is the winner. A lot of fun. Really, really some good stuff going on there from Jerry. Incidentally, Jerry, if you are listening, I do know how to pronounce your name. I just play an idiot on the internet.
Also, he's an idiot in real life.
Right, that too. That's the other thing. One time I stuck some paper clips in a light socket, and I haven't been the same since.
But that was the one I was most excited to see as a holdover from last year, and it delivered. It was everything I hoped and dreamed it could be. I will buy it the second it comes out.
It was a ton of fun.
What about you?
I'm checking the business card now because I played a game on day one before you got there. I'm trying to remember. I couldn't remember the guy's last name. His first name was John, but it was the designer was a fellow named John Balucci, or Balucci at any rate. I think it's Balucci.
Sure. I would have spelled it, but
I don't think I heard him say his last name out loud.
Sure.
So. But his game was called Yalla, Y-A-L-L-A. And it was a abstract card laying game. You had cards which had four spaces on them. They were divided into quarters. And the spaces were either white or black. And they were in different patterns. So like you might have a four white space card or a, you know, three black spaces and a white space, you know, all sorts of different combinations. And you had to place them over one another. So you could only place a black segment of a card over a white segment or vice versa. And one player was playing white, one was playing black, and you were trying to build kind of large areas of your own color. And that was kind of it, really. And there were some mechanics for getting these tokens that you could use to pin it in place so that the other player couldn't play over you. So they couldn't play on that spot.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot, like it seemed simple at first glance, but there was a lot of great strategy to it. It felt a little like push fight in a lot of ways in that I was thinking not only of how my moves benefited you, but also how you could turn them against me, which was kind of cool. Pretty simple, pretty component light, but a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that game. I played a couple of rounds of it with him, at least one or two. The one thing I didn't get to try with it that I wanted to is he had a four-player variant where you were in teams of two trying to manipulate the board, and I think that would have added a really interesting element of trying to set up my ally to have good plays in addition to not setting up so that my opponents didn't have good plays.
Yeah, I saw a brief bit of it played as we were wandering around on Saturday when I showed up, and it looked interesting, but I didn't see it set up at any time when I was free to play games, so I didn't get a chance at it. There is a Board Game Geek page for it.
Oh, he has a Board Game Geek page up? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not super... Well, I don't know. I'm not looking all that much at it. I mean, it's still a prototype, so there's not anything in ratings or anything, but there's a reasonable overview of what the game is and some other information.
Yeah, but it's a lot of fun. John was a really cool guy. A lot of fun to talk to, and that was definitely one that stood out to me because it made... A lot. It's kind of some of the stuff we tried to do with some of our games and more or less failed to because we like big and maximalist games with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But it made a lot of progress with a minimal amount of components. You could do a lot with it and really engage with the game, and it didn't take much. It was pretty cool.
I wonder if he got a lot of feedback saying, and you could add a card or a deck that does this. Or
yeah.
Because when we bring games to a lot of testers that have that are minimalist, at least by our standards,
mm-hmm.
we often end up with feedback that seems to us to be good feedback. But that's like, add a deck that does this.
Mm-hmm.
And then now our minimalist game is significantly less minimal.
It's huge.
And I wonder if that's just a... something that board gamers in general tend, like tabletop gamers,
uh-huh.
they're like, do more things with it, and then it ceases to be minimal, and you have to kind of hold your ground if that's what you're shooting for.
I think that's sort of the nature of the beast with feedback on any kind of creative pursuit in general, because it's quicker to say this is it's quicker to add something than to subtract or modify.
Sure.
You know, like when I would do, you know, feedback sessions or group critiques on short stories,
uh-huh.
As a writing student, snark, that would be the thing that a lot of people would be able to say, well, you just need a paragraph or two explaining this, or you need a scene that shows us this. You need to add something on. And oftentimes you needed the content the person was talking about,
mm-hmm.
like you needed that thing, but you were better served modifying an existing piece to get to it, or, you know, doing so, approaching it more subtly than just slapping a new couple of paragraphs in.
Uh-huh.
Same thing, I think, with board games. You're often better off tweaking to get in that direction rather than wholeheartedly stapling on a new mechanic or a new mini game or a new this, that, or the other. So Yala and Battle Cubed, those are the two games we've kind of gone over so far. What else jumped out at you? I mean, was there anything else we thought? I mean, there were a lot of great games there, don't get me wrong. We're not going to get to talk about all of them.
I was typing a note to myself there because I didn't want to forget it for later. But I wanted to comment a little on what you were just saying before we move mm-hmm. on to another game. I feel like a lot of people... And you definitely see this in when you're in a class and you're forced into a group to mm-hmm. proofread one another's papers or whatever. I wonder how much of this is happening at Protospiel as well, that sometimes you don't have anything to say or anything good to add
mm-hmm.
as a playtester. Sometimes the game is pretty well done. The designer comes to you saying, acknowledging a problem that exists in the game, like Josh did with... pipe dice,
mm-hmm.
and you just don't have anything to give him either.
Right.
And some people, I think there's, so like I was saying, going back to if you're proofreading someone else's paper in group and class and you're forced to, the temptation is to give feedback that isn't all that good,
mm-hmm.
just so that you've said something. Oh, right. I added something. I gave something. And I wonder too how much, like, how do you filter that? How much of that is... just
yeah.
people saying a thing so that they have said a thing.
Right.
So they feel like they've added something and it may not actually be a good thing to add or edit about your game.
Yeah. That's where the Stephen King's principle from his On Writing book, one of my favorite books about writing, tie goes to the writer.
Uh-huh.
You know, if four people give you feedback and two say one direction, two say the opposite, you get to keep whatever you've got. You
gotcha.
got it right enough the first time.
Uh-huh.
Same, I think, with board game design. If about half your feedback is saying, yeah, we like this mechanic and half says we don't, well, you've got a mechanic that appeals to half an audience.
Sure.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty fair and you have to hit a certain number, too, of feedback, though. Like, if you only get the feedback of a small group, that's not enough to know that you're really getting
yep.
enough. But you got to be able to take it all in aggregate, really.
Well, I'm sure I have more to say about that when we start talking about feedback we got on our own.
Yeah, page. Definitely.
So,
I don't.
You don't what?
I got to play a game.
Oh, okay.
That I want to talk about, but I don't know if I'm supposed to because there was some vague discussion of what do you call it?
A publisher
and I'm not allowed to talk about that piece of the game from the designer. So I'll just say I played a game that was really fun. And it might come out someday.
Did I play this game with you?
No, it was before you got there.
Okay.
And it was pretty cool. And I liked it. And the designer is a cool dude. And I don't know how much I'm allowed to say about it, so I won't.
Good shout out. We played Mayan Conquest that Andrew Durier made.
Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Which I was surprised to find that it was fun because it was competitive. It was a card game. I mean, what would you say is even the driving mechanic? It wasn't really...
You would roll a die at the beginning of each turn. That dictated what cards you got to take from the central stockpile. And then you would decide if you wanted to use them to build farms or temples for yourself, which were victory points, or if you wanted to use them to attack and raid other players to get slaves, really was the mechanic. The guy wanted to come up, or Andrew wanted to come up with a different way of doing it.
Yeah.
Calling it, but that's what you were doing. You were slave raiding the other players and steal their stuff.
The point was to build so you could change enough farmers into farms, or a priest and a slave. Was that what it was?
Priest and a slave, yeah.
Into a temple, and farms were worth one and temples were worth two, yeah. Or something like that. And it was first to 10?
Something like that, yeah.
Or first to 15, maybe. What is the winner? And it turned out, it sounds very simple, and it is. And he did it with just three card types.
He used the front and back.
Because the front and back.
Yeah.
And it worked surprisingly well. And so it looked to me like, you know, this is going to be the kind of thinky competitive game I don't care for, but mm-hmm. it was fun. I was a little slow to grasp it because it was that time of day,
right.
And the meds were wearing off. Uh-huh. But I got there, and it was pretty good.
What I think pushed it from the kind of game you hate to a kind of game you like or at least tolerate was that it's got that one little that nugget of random in it, which breaks analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what card you're going to get at the start of your turn.
Right.
So you can plan roughly what you're going to do. You're like, well, I've got this many farmers, so I might be able to get a farm, or I'm close to a temple here, so I'll try for that if I get the right thing. But really, you can't spend too much time doing that, and there's no optimal strategy because you don't know what you're going to get.
But it helped, too, that Eric was there playing, weaving the tale throughout the entire game of yeah. the horrible atrocities being perpetrated against his...
We met a man named Eric at Protospiel who was loud, and he was Andrew's friend, I think.
Yeah.
They mm-hmm. seemed to be traveling together, or at least traveling the game. I don't know if
yep.
they came in,
I think
in the same
they did.
Car. But he was a funny guy. Eric, if you're out there listening to the podcast... you are a funny man, and we appreciated your company.
We appreciated your company quite a bit, both yeah. playing games with us and more than occasionally hearing your victory cries or whatever else it was from across the room from other games.
Standing up and you're pumping your fists at the other table is great. Good type of board gamer to have in your crew. Somebody who can be exuberant without making the other players feel like he's dunking on them.
Yeah.
You know? It always felt like he was exuberant in a way that made the table, everybody at the table feel good, which is a tough needle to thread when the thing you're exuberant about is stealing another player's treasure and preventing yeah. them from having a chance of winning the game.
Yes. I would pay to have Eric narrate all of my board game experiences.
Cause this is getting a little weird now.
Seriously though?
Yeah.
I would.
That would be entertaining. Yeah.
He and Andrew played Big Man. And just constant running commentary. Every
good.
Time a thing happened, he was like, well, now this is what the pig man just did. Look what you've caused, you monster. It was amazing.
It was fun. We had a good time. But the Mayan Conquest game, that was a lot of fun. Component light, very simple, but definitely did the trick. What else? What else jumped out at us as we were going through this year? You said Mayan Conquest and Battle Cubed.
I didn't get to play nearly as many games this year as I did.
No, I felt like we didn't get to as many either. A lot of the chat sessions after a game lasted quite a bit longer, it felt like.
Yeah. We had a similar experience this year to our experience last year, where for me, the first game we played,
mm-hmm.
For you, you'd gotten to a couple already, was just huge, monstrous.
Oh, man. What was that guy's name? Howard, I think it was?
Yeah, I think it was.
Howard
Beatty.
Yeah. Beatty?
I think that's Beatty.
Okay. He had this game that I walked in and I saw it out of the corner of my eye. I'm like, oh, I have to go look at this closer. Because there were stacks of poker chips everywhere.
Huge stacks of many poker
and
chips.
And stacks of paper money and...
Cards. Laminated colored cards.
Laminated cards. And there were boards with like production flow charts on them. Not really a flow chart, but a flow
yeah.
of taking raw materials all the way through to finished delivered goods. And I'm like, oh, I have to drag Johannes into this just to watch the light die in his eyes as we get into hour nine of this madness.
And then I kicked all y'all's asses.
You did. You did very well. It was called Traders of Titania. And he was telling us about it, how he'd come out of a background in supply chain management. And I think the oil industry, he said.
Yeah.
And how he'd initially created a version of this to teach. Like new employees about supply chain management, which is really a cool idea. And he was kind of trying to make it a version he could, you know, sell.
He said that actually he had students or whatever that liked it enough as a game that they encouraged him to tweak some stuff to make it more viable in an open, you know,
yeah.
for people who are already not already in supply chain management for the oil industry or whatever.
Right. And it was pretty cool because you could get. So he had a series of steps you had to get your material through, from raw material to shipping it from the mine, or take it by railroad from the mine to the processing facility and then processing it and then putting it on a boat and taking it from the processing facility
to the distribution
to a distribution center
and then shipping it on trucks or so trucking it to
the final point of sale, whatever it was. It was a fictional resource. And you had to build up your company's capacity in these various resources, these various means of moving the goods forward. But yet he'd implemented economies of scale in the way you did it. So the deeper you got bought into one capacity. So if you bought, I bought heavily into plants, like processing facilities early, it was super cheap for me to upgrade my processing, but it would have cost me huge amounts of money to get started on anything else.
Yeah.
So it encouraged players to specialize, only you can't specialize because you need everything. And so it encouraged, it forced players then to either spend all their money getting a broad supply chain and not being able to really compete because you don't have enough of anything anyway.
Yeah.
Or specialize, but then you have to leech off other people's stuff and pay them whatever you can talk them into paying you or into accepting to use their supply or their capacity and stuff. It was great. Really cool stuff. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It was a similar experience to me for last year. So last year, the first game we played was Dave Spitzley's giant global conquest monstrosity. And this year, it was Traders of Titania?
Traders of Titania, yeah.
Both massive, like, engine-building, huge competitive games. Not my thing at all. And I ended up enjoying myself with both of them and doing reasonably well. So a lot of good feedback. He took the feedback very well.
Oh yeah.
I was really impressed because as a guy who's not really a gamer or an experienced game designer, not to say that we are anymore, but a guy who's, this is first thing he's brought, getting feedback, and I know if I were in that position and got the feedback he got, I'd be like, well, I could change that, but then it wouldn't accurately model what I'm trying to show here. And he did not get hung up on that at all. He was like, oh, I see what you're saying here. I could make this simpler in order to do more complex things over here, or just to allow better player interaction, even if that no longer one-to-one perfectly accurately models what supply chain economics actually looks like in the real world. And he took it very gracefully and was ready to make the changes that needed to be made. So I think I wouldn't be surprised to see that game get picked up.
That game was interesting, too, because it had a weird mix of reactions to one particular mechanic in it. So he'd used different color poker chips for each stage in the process. So you had a black chip when you had raw materials, then it turned into a red chip, and then a white chip, and so on until it got to the end. A lot of players seem to respond with, you should just use one color of chip and advance it down the track as you go. This is a place where that's switching colors is definitely more fiddly because you've got to put the one color back and grab a new one. But I felt like it added such a visceral sense of money counting and just a lot of resources moving around and a little bit of chaos and players, you know, all grabbing for stuff at once and hunting and pecking to get enough chips to represent what you need, that the visual, the feel of it was worth what was enough to make it worth having the fiddliness. If that makes some kind of sense.
I see what you're saying. I feel like there was so much changing already with the between Monopoly money and the cards that represent the, you know, shipping versus trucking versus whatever else. What were those called? Your capacities. You're already doing so much of that banking and that visceral changing, you know, changing of hands and trading and making change. The poker chips weren't needed, and there were so many times where, just for the sake of time, I would just move piles of the same color chip down the track and then trade them out for chips at the end, because really the color of the chip has no meaning unless you're trading them with another player.
Sure.
So I think it's not going to stay. No, I see what you're saying, and I'm all about the, especially because those poker chips were so nice. They were like ceramic, or not ceramic, but there's something heavy and cold, and you know, they felt like coins in the hand, and they were nice to use, but I don't think that's gonna stay.
I see where people were coming from, but man, I liked it.
Yeah,
I liked it a lot. I would sooner try to simplify the money counting and the cards than the poker chips, if I could do, if it were my game. But it's not, it's Howard's. So Howard, if you're listening, I just made a fist bump motion, but we're on the internet, so you couldn't see it.
Yeah.
So just raise up your hand to about chest height and move it forward, and you will feel my knuckles on yours.
Cool. So we're getting toward the end of this segment. I have at least one more I want to talk about.
You go ahead. You go ahead then.
The last one we got to play is Josh Sprung's game that he's working on called Storybook Battles currently.
Yes.
And it is a very interesting... His idea is to have these cards represent... he wants the game to be cheap. So you buy a deck, but it's not like a collectible card game mm-hmm. because you don't... If you buy the Neverland deck, it's always going to be the same deck. So you're not buying booster packs and breaking the bank trying to get the good cards and build your army or whatever. And I don't want to go too much into it, but you end up playing cards out of your hand that are... there'll be a deck for a given like storybook era is how he's currently working with. So we had Neverland versus Wonderland. Mm-hmm. And so I would have a deck for Neverland that would have, you know, Peter Pan and Wendy and the Lost Boys in it, who are good, but it would also have, you know, Captain Hook and Smee and pirates and the crocodile or whatever mm-hmm. in it as bad guys. And, or actually, I guess the crocodile was a good guy. Well, it doesn't matter. I would take all the bad guys out of my deck and give them to Tom. And he would take all the bad guys out of his deck and give them to me. So I would have Neverland's good guys and Wonderland's bad guys uh-huh. in a deck, and you would have, you know, the opposite of that.
Which is a really cool idea, because it automatically gives each player cards that can be deliberately balanced against the other player.
Yeah.
Very smart.
It also changes up the gameplay pretty much every time, because if you're bringing your own deck, it means you're never going to know what half... Well, eventually, if you're playing with the same people, but mm-hmm. you're not going to know what half your deck is.
Right.
And so... Then you play them against each other in this weird kind of positional. They're played in a grid, and there wasn't a physical grid, but you end up with a grid where these cards slide around and their relation to one another. They have a different both defense and attack value on each side because mm-hmm. they're square cards. They're not rectangular, though I guess they actually could be.
It would work either way.
It would work either way.
It wouldn't work very well. They want to be square. Because if you've got... a guy-oriented portrait, and he's a regular card, and you rotate...
Because you can rotate them as well. And it was fun. I really enjoyed mm-hmm. it, and I like the expandability. I like his whole plan to make it affordable. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, everything will be an expansion, but if you don't care about the... whatever it is, the Cinderella expansion, then don't buy it. Mm-hmm. You don't need to. You don't need it to play the game. You need one deck, and the other person needs one deck.
Right.
And then he had some stuff on top, too, that we didn't have time to get to that looked like it made it even more interesting. Some balancing stuff, some stuff to try to mitigate sort of a runaway winner.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And I'm excited about that.
Yeah, we were playing it right at the end, and we were actually in the room after it had closed, and we were supposed to be out of there. So I would have liked more time to play it. And Josh, I was having a good time there when I knocked off at the very end, so don't think I... It wasn't your game's fault. It's just the part of me that's the way I am. But it was a lot of fun. It was a very cool game. And he did a neat job of making the mechanics. And when you describe them, they don't feel that visceral. You know, they're kind of mathy.
Yeah.
But he did a nice job of tying it in very, very well to the characters. Particularly, and the one that stood out to me was Captain Hook. Mm-hmm. Because Hook was really powerful. Except on one side, where he was incredibly weak, as though he had lost a hand.
Perhaps.
And didn't have... you know, strong powers on that side of his body. And I had Hook in my hand the whole game, and I'm like, I can drop Hook, and Hook will mess somebody up, but he is not going to survive Johannes' turn.
Yeah.
It led to some interesting dynamics that way. Josh Sprung, very good game designer. We were sad to see the curly mustache go.
Well, not so much disappear as be subsumed by a full beard.
Be absorbed into the beard. So, also, if that beard is actually a parasite controlling your every thought and whim, blink twice. You're good? Okay, cool.
Do you have anything else to briefly mention? We played a lot of other stuff, and I don't want to give the impression that they were any less interesting mm-hmm. or whatever. We pretty much just ran through things... except for the last one I just brought up, went with things chronologically. But
yeah, Nick Smart's game was a lot of fun, had some potential in the mechanics that he's working on. So good on you, Nick.
I've been emailing with him about a couple ideas we might try to get together with him to playtest. He's already iterated a couple times since then.
I'd playtest with Nick. He's an alright guy. Playtest his game again. I can't remember the guy's name who had the intriguey backstabbing game.
Oh, I don't remember.
I think his first name was Michael, but I've lost his last name. Completely blanked on me.
I don't remember.
Did I get a card from him, maybe?
I didn't.
I did not. So we'll try to look that up and get it in the show notes if we can find it. But he had a cool take on like courtly politics and intrigue and backstabbing. I could see it skinned with like a Renaissance type theme, or even Game of Thrones if you really wanted to go there.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. A lot of fun. And again, not a game type Johannes and I often dig into, but we had a really good time with it.
Eric Slosson had a game called Arachnids, where...
Of the year, just for the name.
For the name. Yeah. Yeah.
So we had some fun with that.
World War II soldiers, and you're trying to take like a Nazi lab, but they have giant genetically engineered spiders.
I got eaten by spiders. It was bad.
And he iterated it a couple times over the weekend, too, and I think it's on the way to something really good. Mm-hmm. It was a little clunky. It played okay because he was there to run it. Without a game master right now, I don't think it works, but it's getting there, and yeah. I think it has promise, so I'd definitely love to see where that goes.
Yeah, the theme will carry it a long way in terms of getting people interested, and the mechanics had some meat on their bones. They needed some work, but there's definitely a good game in there. So good on you, Eric. The other Eric did good too.
Good
there's
on
a lot
him
of Eric.
For different things.
There's Erics everywhere. Our cup runneth over with Erics.
It's a big cup. It's not huge. You know, yeah. Two Erics pretty much overflowed it. But
that's still for a cup. That's
but for
pretty
a cup,
big.
That's a big cup.
Yeah, it's like. If you're fitting any number of Erics in a cup, it's probably a big cup.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think 1 to 2 Erics max.
If you've got a 3 Eric cup, that's too big.
It's out of control.
Don't have that cup.
That's like one of those big gulp cups you see at those gas stations.
Yeah, you don't need that much.
It's too much Eric.
You don't want that.
It's too much anything.
It's bad for you. You'll get Eric diabetes.
I was also trying to come up with a good portmanteau of Eric and diabetes and also failed.
What are you talking about? I succeeded admirably there.
Uh-huh.
Right, yeah. So Protospiel, we had a great time. We played a lot of fantastic games with a lot of fantastic designers. There were a lot of intense beards in the room, and also some unbearded people.
It's true. One or two.
Just a few.
Well, we're going to be right back to talk about our own games because we are that sort of narcissist.
It's our podcast!
And, just know that if you struggle with Eric diabetes, you can contact our helpline at 555-ALARMING or on Twitter at mildlyalarming.
You can do it by email, if you prefer privacy, at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or back to the public forum on the website in the comments section at www.mildlyalarming.com or facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
Or if you pick up your phone and hold it to your ear, and just leave it there for 15 minutes. We'll call you.
You should probably put the phone down, because if you're holding it up to your ear, like, it's off the hook, right?
Yeah, but we'll call you.
Some phones still have that. Like, it will just get a busy signal.
Yeah, but we'll call, and then they'll pick up and...
Tom doesn't understand how phones work, so we'll be right back after I'm finished explaining it to him.
I'm excited. Okay, Clive, I'm here. What's this amazing thing you won't stop bugging me about?
Okay, Jerry, you've got to see this. It's amazing. Do you need to wipe?
Yeah, a little. I had Indian food on the way over.
Jerry, my man, this is going to change everything about your Indian food experience.
Oh?
You know how you get that pressure in your gut, and then you crap your pants, and it gets everywhere, and it smells real bad?
Well, I mean, I wear diapers, but yeah, I hear you.
Well, check this out.
What?
It's a toilet, Jerry. A toilet.
What's a toilet?
When you feel like you're about to brown your boxers, you instead go to the toilet and you make a poop in it. Then you just pull this lever and away it goes. No mess.
Yeah.
Right? Amazing. No more buying industrial-sized bags of boxer shorts. No more having to steam clean your car seats once a week.
Yeah.
What? You don't seem excited.
It's just, I don't know, it doesn't seem that much better. I have to dedicate a whole room in my house to this thing and pump water to it. Seems like a lot of hassle.
More hassle than digging shallow graves at midnight for used diapers after a night on the sauce?
Close, I guess.
Just give mine a try, Jerry. You'll love it.
I don't gotta go right now. I told you, I had Indian food.
At least sit on it.
Do you leave the room?
I guess. I don't know. The instruction manual didn't say.
Huh. It feels kind of cold on my tush. Not bad, though.
Right? Now just relax. Think of melted chocolate, mudslides, thick, creamy malt.
I just really don't gotta go poo right now, Clive. You can't force it. That's what I'm trying to say. Wearing a diaper so you can just go when you gotta go is a lot better.
But the itching, Jerry, the chafing, the endless baby
nah,
wipes.
Nah, Clive, you can have your fancy toilet. I'll duty in my shorts like my dad did, and like his dad did, and like all of my ancestors did back to Scotland, where they had kilts, so they just dutied on the ground. See you later.
But I don't understand.
Toilets. They just make sense. Well, thanks for sticking with us. Welcome back. We are the Mildly Lemon Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich also.
And I'm still Johannes Stauffer.
None of it changed in the interim. But we're glad to have you here. Glad you came back. Glad you listened to that thing that we just did, or somebody did that did the stuff. And now you're here to talk to us again. So what's going on, man? What's going on in your world? Or woman. You could be a woman. We don't know. No? Nothing? Not gonna... The old silent treatment, eh? Well, fine. Johannes, how are you?
I'm okay. You?
I'm fine.
Good.
Good. Good talk. So we talked about Protospiel just a minute ago in the other segment, and now we're going to talk about Protospiel some more because that's what this episode is about. It's about Protospiel and the fun that we had there and the people that we met and the connections that we forged and the ways in which our lives will never be the same as a result of them. How is your life different?
It's moister. But that could just be because the humidity has risen in the area where we live. I don't know.
I was replaced by a race of bug aliens.
Wow.
Yeah.
The Kuthrax?
Sure. I mean, how do you know? I mean, I'm not bugs in
They're
a tom
hideous
suit.
Swarms?
They're hideous swarms.
That's cool, I guess.
Yeah, it's fine. It's okay.
Oh, we wanted to mention a game that we forgot to mention. Last segment.
Yeah, John...
Chaffer.
Made a game that we played.
Called Sticks and Stones.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It involved taking a prompt, writing some words to the prompt, and then trying to guess which stick figure one player thought your words went with.
It was somewhat similar to Dixit, if you've ever played it, except it took intentionally took the necessary creativity level down a peg or two.
Yeah.
So you don't sometimes Dixit seems overwhelming to people who are not the sort to make up a story on the spot or do theatrical type things. And with the...
Like our friend Alphonse.
Yeah. Or me. A lot of the time. Or meat. Or, yeah, like animal protein.
Like if you just slap a steak on a chair and are like, play Dixit with us, Porterhouse, it's not going to have a good time.
But we played... Me, Tom, Josh, a few others, and just a New York strip, just a plain old New York strip, and it did just as well as all the rest of us.
And, after the game was done, the New York strip said, it had wanted to bring a game this year, but it wasn't feeling confident, and it told me a little bit about its design, and I think it's got chops, and I really encouraged it to try next year.
Pork chops, in fact.
Yeah, the game being about that, and it was going to bring it next year, so hopefully that'll come together for it, because I really think it should.
Yeah.
The New York strip steak.
But in this game called Sticks and Stones, rather than the very kind of bizarre pictures on the Dixit cards, there are just a few stick men, sometimes one, sometimes more than one, in various poses and actions. And it's not identical to Dixit in really any other way either, but it's similar enough. And it worked really well. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And we should give a shout out to John, too. Not only for designing a pretty solid game that we had a lot of fun with, but also for winning the Saturday night Protospiel wrestling match out behind the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
He had a pretty good run, and then he topped it off with a spectacular move where he whipped David Witcher off of a table with a steel ladder. It was impressive. I didn't see it coming, but it was quite the move.
Well, in the earlier round, too, he suplexed Sylvan just like right into the asphalt.
Yeah, it was amazing. Just a fantastic move. So, he really clearly had done his homework on wrestling over the year.
Yeah.
Since last year. And it showed. It showed.
Yeah. He took home the belt. So,
it was
this
huge belt with a gigantic die on the front of it.
Yeah.
It was great. So well done, John, all around.
Yeah.
All right.
Congrats.
Congrats indeed. So second segment today, we want to talk a little about the feedback we got on the two games that we took to Frodo Spiel, which is associated with Samwise Spiel. you know, where we're planning to go with that in the coming years, months, days, epochs, eras, and so forth. So let's talk first about the game that we had last year, Big Man, which we played this year also, and that we've been working on for 4 years now. We've been working on Big Man for 4 years.
We're adults.
It's not even a little bit true.
It's legally the case.
It's man. No wonder our country is about to elect Donald Trump.
Terrifying.
Right? Well, because they think tiny hands are the devil's workshop.
Hmm. That's okay.
They're small, is what I'm saying.
Workshop.
Yeah.
Tiny. Okay. Sure. Okay. Right. Nope. Yeah. We're good.
Right. So anyway, we took Big Man again, and this year the big change we made to Big Man, in addition to producing a brand new deck with new cards and some balancing tweaks in the amount of stuff that was in it, we also produced a teaching game version of Big Man. So one of the chief complaints we got last year, or not complaints, but feedback we got was that it took way too long to teach the rules.
You might say that was people's chief beef.
They did beef chiefly about it. Even a guy named Keith. So, like, I think the first time we taught it, it took 17 minutes to get through the rules explanation.
Yeah.
This year we got it down to, I think, 10 or under.
The first year we took it there, uh-huh. when we had worked really hard at teaching it, I think the lowest we ever got it was 17 minutes. Uh-huh. The first time we taught it, it probably took over half an hour.
Sure. But this year, I think we got under 10 minutes a couple
certainly,
of times.
Yeah.
So that was a lot better. The teaching game simplifies it a lot. It cuts out some mechanics that we like, but that just aren't essential to the Big Man experience.
Right.
And it shortens the game as well by only using 40 cards instead of 120. So it worked very well, I thought. I thought that was a very effective addition to the game. yeah, I liked that. I thought it worked. I thought it was a very successful experiment, and people seemed to respond well to it.
They learned quickly. We ran it at least for one guy who said several times, like, I've never played dungeon crawlers before. They're not really my thing. I don't have mm-hmm. experience with them. And he said himself, he felt like he learned it very quickly. He understood what was going on, and he enjoyed playing it.
And the other key thing people consistently said that I really appreciated was they wanted more. Like, they're like, okay, I can see where mechanics would expand this and make it more interesting and more dynamic. I want to play the full version now. I'm not going to, because this is Protospiel and there's like 4 billion shiny things vying for my attention.
Yep.
But I want to. So that was good. That was definitely something we were glad to see happen. Because my concern with the teaching game is that you'll never get to the full game, you know, if you just keep having to teach it over and over again that way.
Like we talked about last couple weeks ago.
Yeah. That was definitely gratifying. We got a little bit of feedback on more general mechanics, but mostly it was just on that, I think. What did you think about our Big Man experience?
I thought it was really good. You ran it a couple more times than I did.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because you were there for longer than I was. I didn't get any feedback other than a few suggestions that they were like, oh, you could add this. And we said, yes, we actually have that already. And if we were to run the full game, you would see that. I didn't. No one had any really... This is broken. This needs to be changed. You know, they grasped the cards. They grasped the mechanics. They got it all pretty quickly, which felt good. I think it's getting close pretty quickly to where we want it to be.
Yeah. It's doing its thing. It's jamming. Incidentally, I was there longer than Johannes because Johannes had an appointment the first day to get the inside of his mouth waxed.
Yeah.
And it ran really long.
I'd been on vacation the week before, and so I hadn't gone to have the inside of my mouth waxed, and just the hair had really built up in there.
Now, tell the truth, though. You kept biting the technician.
Oh, sure, but that's just because it's painful.
Well, yeah, but it's going to take longer if you keep chomping.
Yeah, you try to stop yourself.
I don't get mouth hair.
I know. So you don't. You can't.
I have mouth alopecia. I like the implication there that it's that the normal state is a hairy mouth.
It's just full of hair.
And like I have some sort of disease causing my mouth to be hairless.
Yeah.
If your mouth is hairless.
Do you suffer from mouth alopecia? Call 555 alarming.
So the second game we took to Protospiel this year was Hatchet Fight at the Lumber Mill, which is, if you don't listen to our podcast regularly, shame on you.
Shame.
Is a game about, no, not shame is, Hatchet Fight at the Lumber Mill is a game where you take tokens, huck them into bowls in front of other players on a timer, and they simulate having a hatchet fight at a
lumber mill.
I think it's Costco.
No, that was the first draft. Now it's a bakery.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But like one of those ones that only does cupcakes.
Sure. I would pay enormous money to watch a movie called Hatchet Fight at the Cupcake Store.
Oh, me too.
That'd be great. So Hatchet Fight is a very simple, very fast, not really gamer's game. It's pretty much a party game.
Yep.
I think the most encapsulating comment we got about it was, this game is fantastic for drunk people and 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with.
I think that came from Jonathan Chaffer, didn't it?
I think it came from He Who Chaffs.
Right.
Because, yeah. But yeah, I think that was him. And it was good. I got a lot of great feedback. So there were the main two things I felt like it got feedback on were the balance of the tokens, like how many tokens of this type versus this type, of types that you want to throw into other people's bowls versus types that you want to put in your own bowl. And the foreman token. So the foreman token, when you sink it in another player's bowl or drop it in your own bowl, originally allowed you to force the player whose bowl it wound up in to empty their bowl into the middle of the table.
You could also put it in your own bowl to empty your own bowl.
Yes. And that got some heated back and forth going. Like, there were some people who adored it, and they're like, you have to have that. It doesn't work otherwise. And there were people like, you can't have that. It's garbage with the foreman in. And Johannes and I just have no idea. I have no idea what to do with that feedback.
I think we just need to test it more and be more aware of the sort of people we're testing it with. Part of the problem with some of the tests we ran at Protospiel was that we didn't have time to really get to know the people we were running it with.
Sure.
And so it was hard to say what their preference is for games in general and for a game like this in the first place. So to get feedback, like, we know, you know, Jonathan and Josh and some of those guys sort of well now. So we could gauge where their feedback was coming from, but a lot of the feedback was from people that we were meeting for the first time as we were running this game for them. And it was really hard to say why they wanted the changes they wanted, because people don't often give you the background on why they feel this change needs to be made.
Right.
They'll give you a mechanical explanation of how they think it might fit in the game, maybe. But a lot of the times, just like, I like it better this way, or it wasn't fun when this happened, or it isn't fun when this happens, but that's just as informed by their own experience as the other way of phrasing it.
Right.
And so it seemed to me that we sort of had people coming at this as a casual game on one side, and people coming at this as a, for lack of a better term, a gamer's game on the other side.
Right.
And it was probably somewhere comfortably in the middle, maybe leaning a little toward casual game or party game. And so the question is, which way do we, really, who are we trying to appeal to when we take one person's, it's like the Stephen King, you know, author breaks ties thing that you were saying. Like, we had a couple people say, you have to have the foreman token. Like,
right.
That was the only reason I could even play this game. And we had a couple of people say, get rid of it right now. I hate it. It's the worst part of the game.
Yep.
And my feeling is the people who didn't like it really want this to be a game that they can strategize in, that they can understand from the rule book and get their brain around and really work effectively against one another and almost like build an engine in their bowl of tokens that will carry the win for them at the end. And if you can throw that out at any second, that breaks their whole strategy. Where the other people were like, I'm just having fun chucking tokens around and I don't have the time or the inclination to pay a ton of attention to what I've thrown or what I've kept. And so if I know a log roll just went in and I know I didn't put cleats in, it's nice to be able to just dump it out and not have to worry about it, or whatever it is.
Yeah,
and they may not even be thinking about it that far.
Sure. I agree with you maybe 60 to 75%.
Uh-huh.
But I do feel like even if you're just having fun hucking tokens around, if you get foremaned at the last second and empty out your bowl and don't have time to get anything back into it before the game ends, and so during the scoring round you just have to sit there and go, well, I had one beard in my bowl, so...
Yeah, and I agree with you there, but that's the only point at which I agree with you.
But it is pretty disappointing.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and I get that disappointment. It's something you want to try to smooth out of your game as much as possible.
Yeah.
But the biggest problem Hatchet Fight runs into, I feel like, regardless of the criticism and regardless of the audience you're trying to work toward, is it's 30 freaking seconds to a minute per round.
Yeah.
You know, there's just not time there to have the game really almost be anything other than chaos.
Yeah.
You can't strategize really. I mean, you can be somewhat aware of what's going into your bowl and try to manipulate work around.
Yeah, no, you can't strategize. You were right the first way.
Well, I mean, I have before.
No. But at Protospiel, so sure. And this goes to what I was going to say next anyway, so let me just steal your thunder.
Go ahead.
But we ran it once or maybe twice for a given group before we tried to implement changes.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to Protospiel, testing it with our normal play group, we would run it like 18, 20, 30 times because people were having fun with it. And then if there was something that we came up with that we wanted to change, we'd change it when we went home and bring back a slightly different game the next time we played.
Right.
So already the difference between two to three plays and 10 to 20 plays is huge.
That's a good point.
But also, yeah, and so the a lot of plays just for the data is a big difference. And then a lot of plays versus a few plays between iterations is another difference. And so like we played the game two different ways, like 1 minute one way, 1 minute the other way with JT from the Game Crafter. And so his feedback was based entirely on a single three-player game. And we took it because we wanted to see if he was is right and try to fit it into what we knew of, of a lot of plays. But it didn't help him really get a feel for the game, if that makes sense.
No, I understand that. Yeah.
I think if we were to take this back to Protospiel next year, we would want to say, we're going to play this. Please don't let this scare you off. The game is 30 seconds long. We're going to play this five times.
That's a very good
then
point.
We want your feedback.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's definitely a game that you play a bunch of rounds of.
Because like you said, the strategizing, the like, I'm only going to put tokens in my own bowl, or I'm going to, whatever it is. We didn't start doing that until, I think, the third game day that we brought it to, like halfway through that day. So we had played it probably 100 times at the point that we started like going, wait, what if I start only putting tokens over, you know, I focus on someone else's, or I only take tokens, or I only put good tokens in my own bowl and don't throw any tokens, or whatever it is. So to the point at which you can get to start trying to strategize is a little far out there, because you have to get a feel for the tokens first. And if the tokens are constantly changing because we're iterating the game, it's going to be hard to get there ever for a new playtester.
That makes sense. How did you feel about so let me rephrase that, actually. The piece of feedback I thought was strongest and made the most sense to me, and that I feel like I want to implement, is shifting the balance of tokens so that it's not 50-50 between things that are defensive and go in your bowl and things that are offensive and you want to throw into other bowls, but rather maybe 60-40 or 66-33 or something like that in favor of offensive things. In other words, that the mix of tokens encourages you to throw.
I agree with the throwing is more fun. I feel like it's harder to balance once we did that. And so we came to Protospiel having made a massive change in not only the balance but the number of tokens.
Sure.
So the game we knew we liked, no one ever saw it, Protospiel.
That's fair.
And
that's
so I feel like I don't have a good comparison for any balance changes that were suggested or that we made at Protospiel, because we already started with a game that I felt like was inherently broken. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't the one we'd played and liked. It was a new thing we had tried and not tested yet.
Man, so bad at this.
I think the idea behind, yes, throwing is more fun and adding a little bit of scarcity on the good tokens versus the bad is probably more fun, but I couldn't give you any data based on what we actually played to tell you one way or the other.
Fair enough.
But we did get a lot of good feedback. I liked the idea of cards that change the scoring or just the way the game is played. So
you have to throw with your non-dominant hand.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Ambidextrous players have to throw with their teeth.
If we're going nice, if we're going party game, that's the sort of card you want. You know, so you talked about, you know, maybe for this game you're a lumberjack, but you're going out on the town, and so you don't want syrup because it gets on your shirt, and so they're worth less, or they count against you now, or whatever, that kind of thing. Scoring changes, but that's a little more thinky. Whereas, like, you have to throw with your left hand, or you have to throw with one eye closed. That kind of stuff is more party game. You can only You can only throw at players who are to your left. That kind of like very simple mechanic. So again, we have to figure out what, you know, what audience we're trying to appeal to with it. And I guess we could mix and match the two also.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing with it. It's such a simple game.
And it's so fast to play.
Yeah. And there's no problem really. So the game by default has 75 tokens. That's our baseline that we think works. But it's not hard to print, sell it with, or to make a copy that has
with
100, and then have a couple different mixes in there and say, if you like this kind of game, play with this mix.
Yeah.
If you like this kind, play with this other mix. If you like, you know, peanut butter on your tokens, put some peanut butter on there.
Peanut butter is delicious.
I like peanut butter.
But some people are allergic, and some people have an airborne allergy, which means if you have a peanut butter covered token and you're throwing it through the air, they'll die instantly.
Wow, that's bad for them.
Yeah, airborne peanut butter. They just can't handle it.
Is Alphonse allergic to airborne peanut butter?
I don't think so, but he is allergic to regular peanuts.
Is he really?
I think that's definitely one of the many things.
It's horrifying.
The many, 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 many things.
For those just tuning in, our friend Alphonse is allergic to all things.
If you go back and listen to episode something.
Like 2?
Yeah, I think it might be 2.
It's pretty early on. We spend an entire segment making fun of his allergy list because we're evil men.
Yeah. Plus we make a few mistakes and think that pumpkin quinoa is a thing, which it isn't. Though it might be now, who knows?
It's a good time. Science might have made it.
It seems likely. Science made tobacco.
Did it really?
Yeah, some person actually successfully crossbred tomatoes and tobacco.
It seems like a terrible plan.
Yeah, the tobacco ended up in the leaves of the tomato plant, which, if I understand it, if I remember correctly, are already poisonous because tomatoes are part of the nightshade family. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like, I guess nicotine is also kind of poisonous on its own. So, you know, double poison or triple or quadruple or however many poisons you think
are in there. Doesn't double poison cancel out and it makes you immortal?
It could be. There's only one way to find out.
Gary, where are you?
That was what I was going
to
say.
We're so mean to Gary. Gary, for those of you just tuning in, Gary is our friend who we poke fun at.
We'll leave it at that.
Fair enough. Anything else about Hatchet Fight?
If you want to play Hatchet Fight with us, you can.
Call us.
As long as you can come here to where we are, or you're nearby enough that we could get there reasonably without having to buy plane tickets or something.
We live effectively in Ann Arbor. That's like the major landmark near us.
If you're around there and you want to chuck some wood tokens at us and have us chuck them back and whatnot, you know, we're going to tell you all the places again where you can find us. Should we do that now?
Is it time?
It seems to be slightly past.
Let's do it.
If you want to huck wooden tokens at us, you should let us know that on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can let us know that on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You could do it via website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on the Facebooks at www.mildlyalarmingshow. Nope. Facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. Words. You can also rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play Music, and that's probably all the places.
Or you can mount your majestic stallion and ride it into the sea where Poseidon will tell you how to get a message to us, and he'll just repeat what Johannes just said.
Yep.
Bring scissors.
Week. What about scissors?
Bring them.
Bring them.
In case you get caught in the kelp.
Or a fishing net.
Or the kelp.
Or a net made of kelp.
Or a fishing kelp.
Or a kelp made of fish.
Or a net made of kelp fish. We'll be right back after these messages.
No, we won't.
Oh.
And now, a message from Vic Chefterly, founder of Vic Chefterly's Outer Space Burrito Stand.
I'm United States astronaut Vic Chefterly, and I'm here to tell you that you got tiny little dog hands.
Dog hands? Nothing about burritos. No? Well, he's the astronaut, I guess.